You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 20.
I think the universe works such that perfect information is not possible. It's like almost against the laws of physics.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Okay, well, here we are. Another 10 episodes under my belt. Putting out an episode every week has been all right. Not too hard, but I knew going in that it wasn't going to be easy every single week. And I think this is one of those weeks where it was a little difficult. I actually think the discussion that I'm going to play for you today was a really interesting discussion. We hit on a lot of new ideas, broke new ground when it came to AI and bots and sort of crystallizing the ideas of perfect information versus imperfect information. You just heard that I think we should assume the latter in anything substantially complicated. But the reason why this show was tough was because I've had a fever all day today. I've been at home and sick. Last night when I spoke to Aaron, I was already starting to get sick. So I think the flow of this episode is going to be a little different. My apologies if I seem scatterbrained at times. Now, possibly on the plus side, I also had less of a filter. That's actually a problem that I want to address. I filter my speech sometimes to be less controversial, but that prevents some of the most interesting stuff from coming through. Not necessarily the most accurate, but the most interesting. And sometimes it's important to express these sentiments clearly so that they can be addressed. So enjoy that. That's the positive sign of being a little distracted is me losing my filter a little bit. So that'll be interesting. And this episode is also a little less edited. It's just tough to edit when you have a headache and all that. So anyway, we're going to discuss some of the important news topics and ideas that have come out recently. Fred Ersham's article on blockchain AI marketplaces. I know that that's a lot of buzzwords, but I actually think what he's talking about is the way things will look in the future. Maybe not 2 years future, but maybe 10 or 20 years future. And we're going to hit on some privacy issues, some frustration with travel. But the main topic today is a discussion between Chris Messina and Shane Mack on the podcast Machine Yearning. It was recorded last fall, and Chris Messina gave some of his thoughts on the rise of AI bot agents and what that means for our economy. And since our episode where we do the takedown of AI communism was so popular, we decided to talk about this discussion, which was more informed than the last one. But of course, I also add my caveat of no perfect information, which is something that I want the industry to consider more. It's important to note that Chris Messina wrote a follow-up article to this recently in which he says he's correcting himself, or really amending himself, I think. And that follow-up article talked about some important ethical issues when it comes to these bots, which is a topic we actually touch on a little bit in our discussion, but we didn't see his follow-up article in time, so definitely check that out when you get a chance, and maybe that'll be another topic for our discussion later. Show notes will come out eventually, but they're going to be a little late this week. Give me a break, folks, please. All right, and without further stalling, let's bring on Aaron. All right, Aaron, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
It's really interesting. It's a very nice day today, but as you know, I'm sitting here in my recording studio, aka my studio apartment. So my recording studio apartment, I guess. And there's a thunderstorm, and you know I have this giant window looking out to Borham Hill, Cobble Hill, all downtown Brooklyn, all the way out to the harbor and the Statue of Liberty. And I see this sky lighting up and giant bolts of lightning. So it's a little bit It's pretty cool, but it's a little bit frightening at the same time. So we'll see if this works.
Have you seen a bolt of lightning strike the Statue of Liberty? Because I feel like that's something there have got to be.
I'm sure there are photos of it. I haven't seen it, but I have had videos of lightning storms out the window before. So I've seen lightning over, the harbor. I don't know where it hits.
Very cool.
Yeah. So how was your week?
Exhausting, but good. It was first week back at work after...
After paternity?
After my quote-unquote paternity leave, yeah.
And I also got an x-ray this week, as you know. Something on my foot, they said an extra bone's growing or something like that. I don't know. I'll find out tomorrow what goes on with that.
It's always disappointing when your mutations don't come with any actual superpowers.
Yeah, that really sucks. Well, who knows? Maybe they'll say maybe that will be the diagnosis. So we'll find out tomorrow. But I mention it because you said that you listened to a podcast on episode on radiology on Tech 2025.
Yes, I believe she was interviewing a radiologist who was actually making the jump into the world of machine learning and AI. And part of the motivation for that was that that particular field is one that is highly suited or highly susceptible to being transformed by that technology. Already, chances are...
That's Charlie Oliver, by the way, the host.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you listened to that because I almost always listen to that show, and I think I skipped that one, so I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Well, that was only the second episode I'd listened to because I think the one you mentioned when you did mention it was about long haul truckers.
Right, that was a good one.
And this, I believe, was the next episode after that.
You said they talked about radiologists or the whole field being transformed by AI, but also it's been projected to be transformed by AI for a very long time, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, for a while now, odds are if you get an X-ray while the person performing the X-ray is obviously there in the room with you, the person analyzing it is probably not even in that hospital. It was one of the first fields to go remote, because as long as you have a internet connection or I suppose even back in the day, a fax that has high enough quality that they can send a image, that person can be anywhere and doing the analysis on it. And so once they realized that, you know, you're sending this data out, and it's image analysis, there are certain things that can be done very effectively by an algorithm that doesn't necessarily require an expert human.
Yeah.
And they may have cases have kind of overblown how much of that the human can be completely replaced, as opposed to some of the repetitive tasks being handled by an algorithm or automation.
Right.
It's definitely been a kind of a harbinger of doom in that field for, it sounded like over a decade that people have been saying, oh, you're going to be replaced by computers. Don't bother going into radiology because of that.
And it seems like that has not panned out. And even if we get AI diagnosis, you still have that human element in there.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. All right. Obviously, I'm going to have to check that out myself. And maybe I'll report back after I listen to it. Just a few news articles before we get into the main topic of the day, which is the, you know, capitalism versus AI discussion again with Chris Messina on that.
We keep coming back to the well on that one.
Yeah, on machine learning. But a couple of news articles before we get started. First of all, one that came out today, which I found very interesting, which was kind of a positive thing in a sea of just nasty stuff you get on the Twitters. In Saudi Arabia, the ban on women driving. So up to this point, women could not drive in Saudi Arabia. You had to be driven around by someone else. That ban was lifted today. And, you know, you hear stories of people saying, wow, I'm much freer today than I was yesterday. So like I read that and I'm like, wow, that's a lot of people. And I'm, you know, really happy for them. And I also found a Twitter status of somebody who is a Saudi woman who's a racer. Am I looking at this correct? The French Grand Prix. So now she can race in her home country, I guess. I don't know how you become a racer.
It's probably like those Olympic athletes who compete in the Winter Olympics and come from countries that never ever have any snow or natural ice.
So they become interested in it from afar and then train somewhere else.
I guess so.
Which is always fascinating. I guess it makes sense that some people would become interested in it if it's something you can't do.
Maybe there's a lot of simulator training involved.
Yeah. I guess you could. Anyway, I just thought that was an example. I know I'm not here to say, oh, you know, Saudi Arabia is a free country now or anything like that, or Saudi Arabia, or you know, I have any criticisms of it or whatever. But like, hey, I thought that was pretty good news. So. I don't know, it's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of room for improvement, but you could say that about aspects of freedom in the U.S. as well. So,
I always thought, what would be an equivalent like, oh my God, this rule change lifts a weight off my shoulders in the US? And I thought maybe it would be if they said, you don't have to go through the TSA anymore. Like just one day, it was just like, this whole part of your life is just gone. We're not doing it anymore. Wouldn't it be like, oh my God, just a sigh of relief. I never knew this was life could be like this. It's like, even with the,
it's tough to put it on the same level though, because
it's not the same.
We remember a time before the TSA.
I mean, I remember a time before the TSA. I guess I flew a little bit, but
we were young teenagers in that era.
It was always tight. I probably only flew a few times under that era, and there was still tight security, like in the '90s. Like I remember, or still long lines, and they're still patting you down. I mean, even in the movie Airplane, that from the '70s, they made fun of airport security. So it's been building on itself for longer than we've been alive. I'm sure it wouldn't be the same effect on me in my day to day, but I don't know. That's just what came to mind. I'm trying to think of a better example. All right. Anything else on that? Or let's go on to the next one.
Yeah. Let's move. Good news, but let's move on.
All right. Move on. I want to point out Fred Ersham's article on Medium talking about blockchain based machine learning marketplaces. And I want to point this out. Well, first of all, I know Fred Ersham. I don't know him very well, but I met him once. He is the co-founder of Coinbase, which is, one of the largest venture-backed Bitcoin companies in the United States. I've been to their office a few years ago to give them a technical presentation of some of the stuff that we did at Foursquare and to learn a little bit about them. It was a lot of fun. They're actually, in some ways, they're controversial in the Bitcoin space because there are some Bitcoiners who say, well, Coinbase is kind of like a centralized service and Bitcoin is all about decentralizing things. But I kind of feel like, hey, you have to have something that's sort of an in-between, and you have to have some way for normal people to buy their coins in an easy way, which is what they provide. So now he's off, stepped away from that, I think, recently to work on some venture funds. But anyway, that's also like blockchain and Bitcoin based. But his article, and I don't want to get into too many specifics because there's a lot of specifics in the article and it's pretty long, but it really is kind of like the holy grail of how all of these technologies come together, and this is something that I've been thinking about a lot too. You have blockchain, you have machine learning, and you have marketplace. So what this means is blockchain, that means the data is decentralized. Machine learning, that means each person is using some kind of AI to determine what the right move to make. And third, it's a marketplace. So at one end of the network, there's people buying. At the other end of the people, they're selling. And somehow the buy and sell orders and preferences are getting rerouted throughout the system in a very smart way. Creating, a really intelligent product. It's a very high level way to think about it. It's not too specific in terms of what field this is going to disrupt or whether this is a single system or you're going to have many systems like this. But I thought it makes sense and I think it's an idea worth exploring further.
Yeah, I definitely liked the idea of it and kind of the inputs and the results made sense, but My grasp of it was not strong enough to provide any meaningful critique to that middle step, the big question mark that comes before profit in the three-step process.
Yeah, well, I guess if you are connecting buyers and sellers, I guess the connector takes a fee somehow, and whoever is the most intelligent connector takes the best fees.
Yeah.
It's setting it up, talking about how it works. Once it's set up is easy. Setting it up from scratch, that's the hard part. That's the chicken egg problem that you talk about in business. That's the incredibly hard portion.
Well, he alluded to several things that are kind of working on pieces of this, but it might be tricky to organically grow into what he envisions without some form of guidance. And And at the same time, I think he was saying that he doesn't know exactly what form it's going to take. So it's difficult to provide that kind of guidance. But nonetheless, I like the idea of what he's talking about there.
Sure. I mean, yeah, I encourage people to try to think of how this type of thing would work. And, you know, if I ever went off and tried to work on some of my own projects, a few of my ideas might look something like this. So just warning you. Okay, on to the next article. So we have this one from the U.S. Supreme Court says that there is a warrant needed to get cell phone location data. In a landmark digital privacy case, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled Friday that police need a warrant before obtaining cell phone location data about a suspect from telecom companies. Now, I'm not sure if you didn't need a warrant before, or if somebody was, or if you did, but some government agency was trying to challenge that. So I don't know if this was playing defense on privacy or offense on privacy, but seems like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I like the one line result there. I have not read the actual consensus argument or the dissent on the case, and I am not a lawyer, so I don't know the finer details of what's going on there. But my assumption is that this was a case where previously the police or whatever law enforcement agency had gone to the cell phone company and said, "Give us this data," and they said, "Do we have to?" And they said, "Yes, you have to." But there was no judge, no warrant, no minimum level of evidence required to justify that. And so now the courts are saying that you need to, as a law enforcement agency, go before the courts and make your case to a judge who then signs off on it to force the telecommunications company to provide that information.
Yeah. Yep. Now, this sounds good, but in practice,
this is completely separate from, this doesn't prevent Verizon or AT&T or whoever from just giving away that data.
Oh, of course.
Or selling it to another company or to law enforcement or to the government. But it prevents the government from saying, "Give it to us," without at least having to meet a minimum standard of evidence.
Yeah. Or a minimum amount of payment or whatever. I also think,
separate from that,
without a warrant. Without a warrant. Now, sometimes I think some of these courts just say, they I don't know how rubber stamp these warrant courts are.
Well, yeah, that is one of my concerns, and particularly, and then this to my knowledge, this did not involve the FISA courts, but FISA courts are very involved in like wiretapping.
Right, those are notoriously rubber stamp.
Yeah, the impression is that pretty much if you can fill out a form, then the judge will say, "Sure, give it a wiretap," and so while there is "quote unquote legal due process," there it is in name only, and I would not be surprised if there are some legal jurisdictions where that is how this is treated. That yes, they still have to, they do get a warrant, but the step of getting a warrant is purely paper pushing, as opposed to actually restricting the actions of
investigators.
Whether
checking that it's a good idea or not. Well, good to know.
But again, not a lawyer, not in law enforcement, not a professional in the telecommunications industry, at least in that sector.
So we have to repeat that you can't get legal advice or investment advice from this podcast?
The legal investment advice you get from this podcast is worth exactly what
you
paid for.
Well, look, I don't agree. I think that there are some great ideas in this podcast, and if you could suss them out, you can make a lot. But if you totally just, take a sentiment that we have and just trade on it, that's probably not a good idea. But again, we're not giving specific advice. We are providing knowledge on this podcast, okay? It's an investment in knowledge always pays the highest dividend. Who said that? That was
I think the takeaway is this case is a win for Fourth Amendment rights and protections of persons in the United States.
Good to know.
So good on that front.
Now let's talk about the main idea, because actually our most talked about podcast episode on the Local Maximum, the one that's gotten the most response so far, is I believe it was episode, I want to say 14, I could be wrong, but the one with the AI will lead to the death of capitalism and, like, you know, the communist world will rise up. Yes, it was episode 14. Robot communism sucks. I tend not to put that kind of harsh language in the title, but that was just so amusing that I had to put it that way because it was kind of funny. We found a discussion on the Machine Yearning podcast, which is a new podcast from a company called Assist. The interviewer is Shane Mack interviewing Chris Messina, where they sort of touched on this a little bit, but they had a pretty different twist on, you know, the effect of AI and machine learning on quote unquote capitalism. So I want to kind of summarize what they were saying, and then maybe we could talk about
just it. Just out of curiosity, how did you find machine learning? Do you know either Shane or Chris through your various circles, or did you stumble upon this?
I follow okay. Chris Messina on Twitter. I've seen him speak at multiple conferences. I've seen some of his videos. He's very well known in, you know, the tech industry. They introduced him as the inventor of the hashtag. He's very much into bots. So when I was building MarsBot, you know, he was one of the main thinkers on bots and their future. And he's used MarsBot. He has said on Twitter very nice things about MarsBot. So I am very grateful for that. You know, he knows his stuff in the industry in terms of what's coming.
Excellent.
Okay, so they asked. So Shane asked Chris Messina, what is a brand in the future? And you know, they said, there are these consumer bots coming, and they're coming before enterprise bots. That means bots that talk to people and help you, kind of like MarsBot, but also, you know, I'm talking about the Amazon Echo, the Alexa, don't listen to me, yeah, or Google Now, or all of these things, and they will help you make your purchases. And so the idea came up that, well, you know, brands exist because the brain can't remember enough. So the idea is, okay, I can't remember, you know, I can't come up with a preference on product on every little thing. I can't remember, you know, who sold me what. And, you know, I can't do my research on every single product to make sure that this product is exactly what I want. So instead, I remember brands that I like. And I say, well, I like this brand, so I'm just going to trust them. And then that way you have a smaller number of brands to choose between. And once you choose the brands that you like, you can make your purchasing decisions easier. They're less optimal than if you dove in and looked at the specific products and all of their different configurations, but it's less costly in terms of, you know, brain attention, but also so more efficient that way, but sort of less efficient from an information theoretic, like in terms of information being used efficiently across the market way. And so the idea is that, you know, you have now a broker in terms of these chatbots, where you go to a chatbot and you tell it, hey, I have this problem and I want this product. Let's say I want batteries, or I want toilet paper, or I want, of course, if you ask for that on the Amazon machine, they're going to give you Amazon's brand. But you know, all you have to do, right. But all you have to do here is come up with the bot that you like, and then the bot will choose between all the products that you like. So in other words, they kind of told it about, you know, in their view, it was sort of like the bots are, or the agents are the only brands that matter. And then all the other brands will just be fighting over specs that the things know about you. Now, I don't think I wouldn't go to that extreme. I would just say, well, the importance of the bot that you choose that will be one of the brands you choose, but you'll still have preferences on brands on the back end, because I don't think that a bot can know infinite amount about you.
Yes. Yeah, so You're saying that either, and I can say because I don't have one in the room, but Alexa or Siri,
yeah, I have my headphones on, so it can't hear me.
Or the Google Assistant will be your brand, or whatever.
It's funny. I'm like
whatever
afraid
replaces
of
those in the future, or supplants those in the future, and that'll be based on their ability to determine the highest quality products that meet your particular needs with whatever algorithm they're using under the hood, as opposed to saying, well, I'm a Duracell as opposed to an Energizer guy because of whatever formative experience I've had between the two, or maybe because my parents always bought that, or I like the bunny in the commercial, or whatever it is that caused me to be brand loyal in the past to a particular product. Now I'm brand loyal to my assistant or my bot that I trust will always find me the best option.
Yeah, yeah. So I somewhat agree with this, but I have a friendly amendment to this sentiment, because I think that, yes, these agents are going to be personalized. That was the whole point of MarsBot, was to learn about you. And there's a big, long way to go on stuff that it can learn about you. And I think that, you know, like at Foursquare, you can learn where you go. Google knows where you search. We know an incredible amount of person, but about a person, and we could use that to help drive the recommendations and even drive the final thing that's purchased in some cases. But as I said on my appearance in Artificially Intelligent, that other podcast that I was being interviewed on, I think we have to make a distinction between having an order of magnitude more information than we do now, which I think we absolutely will, versus having an infinite or perfect information, because I believe that perfect information is really not possible, but order of magnitude increase of information is. And so we should think about the latter and not the former. And when you don't have infinite information, I believe that these bots, first of all, they can't make the final purchasing decision for you in all cases. And secondly, there's going to be stuff about you that it's not going to know. I think there's stuff about each person that even we don't know, we have to think about. So let me give you an example just to illustrate this, right? 4 years ago when I found this apartment, I had to go through the incredible experience of finding an apartment and shopping for an apartment in New York City, right? And I'm sure you've looked for houses too. Yes, it's an order of magnitude tougher in New York City, but sure, you had some troubles.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
It was so not maybe a you quick had and easy and pleasant experience.
Yeah, yeah. But the question is, what is it about a place to live that makes you choose one place over another? And when you think about this question, you realize that there are so many different dimensions that it's almost impossible to A, list them all, and B, try to figure out which ones are, how to like rank them in terms of importance, or like, you know, rate them in terms of importance, or see how they interact with each other. So just in terms of an apartment, okay, you have the easy one, right? Price. I'd rather pay less than pay more. Okay. Another one is close to the subway. Okay. But then there's a lot of questions to ask. Well, what places do you need to travel to day to day? And then there's a follow-up questions. Is any of that expected to change? Like, you know, if I work somewhere and it's like, yes, this apartment is very convenient to that workplace, well, it really matters whether I plan on staying in that office for the next 5 years, or whether I think, no, that'll probably change and I can't really predict where it's going to go. Now let's talk about, you know, the aesthetics of the place. Aesthetics is very important. You want to wake up, be in your apartment, and you want to be, you know, you want to be happy with where you are. And so is a view important? Well, you know, you could say, yes, I would say, I don't want a view to the brick wall, but I've seen a lot of great views. And some of them I'm like, well, I don't like that building right in front of me. It looks uglier than this other one. Okay. I mean, how is an algorithm going to figure that out? About
pretty hard into subjective.
Right, right.
And well, and that's, yeah, that's the piece there.
Right, right. And it's all subjective. I mean, I suppose machines could start asking you these questions and start, you know, hey, does my furniture fit? You know, that's a big one. I don't like this place because there aren't any, like, the angles aren't quite right. You know, there are all sorts of little things that could make you choose. And I don't think, like, if you look at someone who's trying to choose an apartment and you ask them, okay, rank these in terms of which are most important, which are least important, I think people would have a hard time ranking them. And they'd start asking, well, you know, is the view important? And they might be like, well, how bad is the view we're talking about here? You know,
even to take it a step back, and this is a very complex problem that would be
obviously the view is different from
to quantify.
An apartment in New York City, because you only have a certain number of windows, but it still matters, you know, out in the country or wherever you are.
Right, but to simplify drastically, yeah. If you're shopping for electronics, yeah. and let's narrow it down to, I want to shop a TV.
Right.
And if you've ever been to a website where they've got the, you know, select, you know, four or five different items and click the compare button.
Yeah.
And then you can look at all the stats. Right. Pretty much everywhere I've done that, I've looked down those stats and not everything will be filled out kind of in an equal grid. And inevitably there'll be, you know, one category, it'll be, refresh rate. And three of them will have a value listed and there'll be nothing for the fourth. And then there'll be another category that's something slightly differently worded in their database, but means the same thing and it'll list that value. So it's in a different column and you can't direct. So if a bot was trying to interpret that, it would be a mess. And if it's something as simple as comparing two or, comparing four different TVs, which have pretty much all the same, categories of stats on them, but we can't even get a database to clearly line up all those comparisons. I can't imagine how you would do that for something that involves any sort of subjective categories, that there's a lot of work that needs to be done before we can effectively send an AI off and expect it to crunch that effectively without having somebody.
Imagine a world where these AIs and these bots are 10 times better than they are now. Maybe you can come up with a solution. Well, I know you could probably come up with a solution to the, multiple columns thing. Like maybe it'll just know, and maybe it'll know certain things about you that,
there's probably some bot that's job is to clean up databases and make all that nice and pretty so everybody else can deal with it more effectively.
And so maybe there's a bot that knows about, your apartment layout or your house layout. So I forget that not everyone lives in New York City. Sorry, there's a world beyond this land here. It's essentially its own country. Yes, a bot can figure out a lot more than it does now, but I still see the long tail of preferences that even a human being, when we live in a world where even a human being can't always verbalize all of their own preferences, then it's just not going to be possible to achieve the perfect information, which means that the brands don't go away.
It makes me think of performance reviews, which is, okay, now let's take your subjective, difficult to quantify performance over the past year and put a number between 1 and 5 on it in several different categories so that I can crunch it in a spreadsheet and compare you to everybody else with these somewhat arbitrary ratings.
With other people rating, like everyone.
Yeah.
I've been at a company like that. I hope the annual reviews for me are just like, tell me a few ways that I can improve from my coworkers. And I don't have to agree with all of them. So I'll go through them and I'll be like, okay, I agree with these two and I'll work on these two. And whoever wrote this one can go to hell, basically. Sometimes. I mean, sometimes you can't always fix everything at once. It's overwhelming. Or sometimes you don't agree. Sometimes a lot of times in these reviews, you think that someone is trying to mold you in their image and you're like, I don't want to be like that guy. So, why would I take their advice? I hate to be, someone's going to find this recording and somehow use it against me. I know.
It's going to come back to bite
you. I'm going to put it in anyway, just because, if I don't keep this, if I cut out all the stuff that could possibly come back to bite me, this will just be a boring podcast. Okay.
Fair enough.
So,
So we were talking about perfect information versus orders of magnitude more information.
Right. I think it's a very important distinction. And then I realized, so first of all, you know, this sort of capitalism is not the right model for AI, I think was the way he put it. But I don't think, you know, whenever you see something like this, you have to dive in and see what they're really talking about. And it turns out that in this case, they're talking about something very different from what the professor in the Washington Post was putting, where the professor in the Washington Post was basically saying that, you know, capitalism is no longer going to work because, you know, Das Kapital and the worker is going to rise and we got our socialist society coming right up for you. No, this one, and now the one similarity is perfect information, which is, I think we have to have more discussions about that because I think that is kind of a common misconception. That's the common way where I think that I think a lot differently from other people in the field is I don't see perfect information as a possible way. Like I don't, I think the universe works such that perfect information is not possible. It's not allowed in our universe. It's like almost against the laws of physics in my view.
Well, and this goes back to the very beginning, I believe in episode zero, where we were taught the difference between Bayesian and frequentist approaches if you have perfect information, then perhaps a frequentist analysis is more appropriate in some cases. But in these imperfect information cases, a Bayesian approach frequently it proves to be a more nuanced way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going to dive into that a lot more in next week's episode, where I'm going to have a long monologue on what is information, what is a fact versus a belief, and what is subjective probability. So I'm going to have, it's going to be like
next time on the Local Max.
It's going to be episode zero on, or some of our discussions, episode zero on steroids, basically. So it'll be very fascinating. I'm psyched to kind of try to state that. So I think they weren't talking about the end of capitalism. They weren't talking about the end of, you know, free trade or anything like that. But more like AI will force the current marketplace structure to evolve and be more efficient. I think that's the way you said it before.
Yeah. It's not so much that it'll be the end of capitalism, like that previous article mentioned, but that a post-AI world, capitalism will look different than it looks today.
Right, right.
And that's because this talk of enterprise bots versus consumer bots and what does a brand mean, that these brands, which have been somewhat dominant, and the kind of multinational corporations, the big actors, will not necessarily own the marketplace in the way that they do today, that there'll be a major shift, but it will still be a system built around markets and free exchange.
Right. And I think that, you know, I agree with the idea that we could have more agents out there being like, okay, I am going to, like, here's the service you signed up for. You have an agent, it finds out about you. I have a budget, I know your budget. I am going to make purchases for you that I don't necessarily run by you, but I use all the information at my disposal to look out for your interests. And I'd be like, okay, I trust this agent to do so. And so a lot of the purchasing decisions will be made by bots, but I think it will be a gradual process. And I think it's not a process that is totally alien to us in today's world. You know, we trust third parties to do stuff for us all the time. I mean, we sort of think, okay, but I make the final decision on the purchase, but not really. Like, if you, you know, you often purchase things in packages and you let the, you know, company decide what goes in your piece of technology, what goes in your tour when you're a tourist, like what, you know, what goes in your tour package. You know,
well, there, in the last three or four years, there's been an explosion in these subscription boxes where I will give you, you know, I don't know, what is $100 a month or a couple hundred bucks a quarter, and send me a box with things that, based on the information I've given you, you think that I will enjoy and will enrich my life. And that's very much a step in that direction. Although I don't know, there's Some of them tout the fact that there is, you know, a stylist or an expert who will be choosing these for you, but I'm sure that there are some of them that use some sort of AI algorithm to pick those things out.
Yeah, and a lot of these things use, you know, AI. I forgot. I'm trying to remember what some of these companies are. I don't know off the top of my head, but there are definitely companies that use recommender systems. And I remember this because I've been to the recommender system conference several times, and there are companies working on products that will just send you stuff and it'll be like, yeah, if you like it, you keep it. And if not, you send it back. And we're just basing it on, you know, AI. We're basing it on our recommender system. So already happening. And it's been happening for quite a while.
Well, and that's interesting because it kind of, it straddles this brand identity thing that on the one hand, and maybe people do, but in my experience, I haven't met anyone who I've said, oh, I like the shirt or the bag that you've got. And they say, oh, I got it through this subscription service. Right. No, they might say, oh, it's such and such a brand. Even though they didn't go out actively seeking that brand necessarily, but they still identify with the brand once it's in hand. So we're in kind of a transitional space there. Unless we start seeing all of that stuff that no longer will you have your designer bags. It'll say, you know, brought to you by Amazon. Not Amazon Basics, but Amazon Glamour or something.
Amazon Glamour.
A premium
line. Don't give Jeff Bezos any ideas. He's already too busy with space right now. Come on. Got to have that space force. Okay. So let's think about that. I do like the idea that right now there are too many sites and too many apps, and so we need to reduce that mental overload into just saying, you know, this is what I need.
Yeah, one that we didn't even mention when we were talking about this previously, but booking travel. Yeah. So you can go to any of the airlines, right. You can go to any of the travel agencies, or you can go to one of several aggregators, not all of whom necessarily aggregate from the same sources. And then there are aggregators, and it's just a mess. How do you know at what point you're getting the best deal or getting the most efficient use of your time out of the search process?
Yeah, I use Google, and I think they're pretty good. And I also, you know, I have AA Advantage, American Airlines, so I try to use my points.
So you're loyal to a brand there to some extent?
To some extent. I mean, I'll look at both basically, and then I'll make my choice. There are certain airlines that I like more than others, but price matters, and it's
yeah. Personally, I think Delta is the worst airline except for all of the others. So to some extent, I'm a Delta man. But
well,
but that
also,
was not entirely my own choice. I kind of fell.
Have
into
you
that.
Ever flown Sprint or Spirit or Allegiant?
Allegiant, I definitely haven't. I think I may have flown Spirit at one point.
I
are they one of the super low cost ones?
Yeah. I heard that's a little rough to maybe understate it.
If I have, it was a decade ago, so I don't know if that was actually them or if it was another airline that maybe doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. So speaking of booking travel, like I was, I had to deal with a travel issue the other day. And it made me realize how difficult it would be to handle certain things with an AI until you get something so intelligent. But even if you get something up to human level intelligence, it might not really. Well, let me give you the example and then we could talk about it. So, you know, I called up the phone and it wasn't really too intelligent. It was just a, you know, dial one for this, two for that. But it was like, hey, would you like to dial one for canceling a flight? B for checking, two for checking your reservation, three for making your reservation, four to inquire about flight times and prices, that sort of thing, right? And then I'm like, none of these. And then it said, please state your request. And I said, well, I used my points to put a flight on hold, and now I have 24 hours to decide whether I want to keep it, but I want to know if maybe I just want to pay cash, or maybe if I could just use my points on the way there and use my cash on the way back, or do it vice versa, and then I want to sort of decide between all those options. How is a bot ever going to get that. I mean, that's, and by the way, it hooked me up with a human, and the person was very good. Not only did they take me through the options, they looked for other flights that might work for me. And also they helped me determine, like they asked me questions about, you know, my points and how often I travel and stuff to sort of help me think about how to make that decision. So the human, at American Airlines or AA Advantage was actually extremely helpful. But if you asked me to build a machine that was that helpful, man, even I'd be stumped. I'd think you'd need some kind of general AI.
I'm almost never calling a company when the question I want answered could be answered or dealt with by going to their website, which those first four options, those are all things I could more easily do by going to their website and not have to deal with listening on a phone and talking to a machine, which is still something that I have kind of a bias against. And it's probably based on the early days of really egregious, phone decision trees. But
not only that, like it's, I think the problem is a lot of people do call the airlines with these simple queries, which is why it sort of ruins it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So that's, they have to kind of.
Well, and the other problem is that even if you know how to short circuit it to skip through the whole phone tree and get me immediately to the, I need to talk to a real live
yell
person.
At it. That's what works for me.
But most of the time you still, then you go into a waiting queue because everybody else wants that same thing.
Yeah. And it could last 15 minutes. It could now they'll call you back, which is kind of nice, but it's still, you still can't start something big while you're waiting for that phone call.
I was calling, the State House last week I wanted to express my displeasure about something with the governor. I won't get into the politics of that, but after I got through the phone tree and made it clear that yes, I want to talk to an aide or a constituent services person or whatever the term they used was, it's like okay, you can either give us your number and we'll call you back at some point in the future, or stay on hold while we wait for somebody to actually be able to answer the phone. And I was on hold for maybe it was 10 or 15 minutes before I finally got a person and had my 30 seconds say what I need to say, and then I was done. But I feel like frequently that when I'm trying to get to an actual person, that's kind of the experience. I spend more time waiting in the queue to get to the person than I do actually telling them I have to tell.
All right. So I think we've almost wrapped this up, or we're almost out of time. Is there anything else that we should say about this before moving on?
Yeah. There was a little bit of talk about how kind of in, I guess they talked about the different stages of not really the evolvement of the evolution of the web, but how at one point everything was about your website. And then with the advent of kind of the iPhone and smartphones in general, it became everything became about your app as a company. And that was how you got frontage in front of a person. And so with the website, there was search engine optimization. And with the app, there are other ways that you can kind of optimize to get that app opened in front of people. And in a post app world where it's being handled more by these bots, digital assistants or whatever the term of art for them becomes, there's going to be some new level of optimization or brand jockeying, but it's all going to happen behind the scenes so that when Alexa or Siri or the Google Assistant gets a request for batteries, that your battery brand makes it to the top of that stack, whether you're Energizer or Duracell, or Joe Bob's battery company from the Midwest, that you float to the top somehow,
right?
So, and that's where the competition is going to take place, less so than putting Super Bowl ads with the Energizer Bunny,
right? So think of it. I think of it as SEO for bots. So SEO is search engine optimization. It's how do I get my website to the top of Google? And that was a bit of a dark art, 10, 15 years ago, where there are ways to like hack it. Google's gotten really smart now. I think the answer a lot of times now is A, make it actually genuinely a good website. But then on top of that, there are things you could do. You could clean up on the back end, like, you know, like having your domain name registered for a longer period of time, I think was one of them. Although all of this could be outdated information. Having your HTML not be...
Yeah. It's definitely a moving target, because much like viruses and hacking, that as Google or whoever owns the rankings is determining how people are gaming the system, they try and counteract that so that it's showing legitimate value, not just who paid somebody to go and tweak their stats.
Right. But I do assume that having your domain name for longer should matter, because you did pay for that. So it's not like something that you can do.
It may be very much like on certain forums or news boards where, you know, you can't post if you've only had a username for a certain period of time, or you require moderation if you've only had, you know, X number of posts or less, because you're not a known quantity.
I've been noticing on the Reddit, Bitcoin board, right now there are a lot of people who are saying like really, really, negative things about Bitcoin, but some of it looks very ridiculous. And every single time when I look up at the username, it says Redditor for 3 weeks or something like that.
Well, and that could be a number of things. It could be that they've created the account just to do that. It could be they've been on Reddit a long time, but they were banned or kicked out for something they said before, and so this is their new identity. or they could just be that they're new to that particular space, but maybe they have something valid to say.
Everyone who talks like that?
Yeah. This is very dangerously close to fake news and sock puppets, but that's a topic for the day.
Right, right. No, but Reddit is one of those companies where I think, they've done a better job. At least I can tell a lot more easily. Like when I go on a lot of different subreddits, I can tell, oftentimes you have a group of trolls who, and it says it right there in their username that they're just brand new people. And so you say, oh, I don't know exactly what's going on, but I know something is going on.
Yeah, that tends to be kind of a red flag there, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if it's all of them.
Yeah.
It's not the guys who've been putting and gals have been posting on that for, years.
Well, so there are two more things I wanted to mention real quick Christmasy discussion. One was we've been talking about Amazon cruising back and forth here, and we mentioned Amazon Basics, and if you have an assistant that not only is providing you the service of selecting products for you, but also works for a company that has their own branded products, such as Amazon Basics, is there a conflict of interest there? And I'm surprised we haven't heard more discussion in the mainstream about that, because from my perspective, it absolutely is a conflict of interest, especially because Amazon also has the ability to, and I'm not saying they are doing this, but how would we know that they're not going under the hood and tweaking reviews for both their own products and the products of the competitors to their own products to ensure that not only does Amazon Basics products come up first at search, but also that it appears to be the hands down winner in a apples to apples comparison.
This is why I've suggested at Foursquare HQ that we should just open a cafe. We can make sure it has the best reviews. We could send everyone to it. kidding, of course. I think this is part of trusting the top level brand.
Right. And they can get away with that at this point, and people aren't openly asking that question because Amazon has built so much brand reputation.
I don't care if they send me their batteries, to be honest. Things.
Yeah. Between their 2-day shipping and Prime and everything else they're doing, people will say, oh, Amazon brand on it. I trust it implicitly. And I haven't had an experience that's made me say, I don't know about that. I've read a couple of things that have said, like, for example, the Amazon Basics AA batteries might be slightly out of spec. Mm. But I have personally had that experience, so who knows?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, is it's not like they're actually manufacturing them. They're partnering with most likely somewhere in Asia, and slapping their brand on it. So it's something to keep an eye on. And the other thing which is related to that is something that Chris mentioned. And I think you quoted out in the notes here is that in terms of interaction with these bots or these brands is the baseline level of what makes for a good interaction is such a low bar. But the flip side of that is how do you use this information in an effective manner without crossing that line into being overtly creepy? Like, 'cause we know they're collecting all this information on us. And on the one hand, if Amazon says, you know,
bots are stupid,
I noticed
but to be smart,
it's been 4 weeks since you bought toilet paper. I figured you're probably running out by now, aren't you? That could be super helpful. And it's like, oh yeah, I didn't. I've got two rolls left. I should probably order now. Or it could be that's just really creepy that you're monitoring my bathroom habits in some fashion, and I'm not okay with that. And I'm sure there are better examples, but it's knowing how to use that information in a manner that is. And part of it is function, but also tone. That
right.
That you it could very well be a useful thing, but if the message isn't delivered in the right tone, then it completely backfires. And we've seen that with social media managers at Fortune 500 companies that they've put their foot in their mouth.
We learn this
so
all
terribly.
The time. Like people skills. Yeah. People skills are extremely important. And people skills is a general AI problem. It cannot be solved really with narrow AI, although you can maybe get certain aspects of it.
Yeah. So I think the final thing I wanted to mention on this is we've talked about kind of the big three in these digital assistants right now being Alexa, Siri, and the Google Assistant, and there are a couple others out there. I think is it Samsung has like Bixby on their phones and
maybe well Cortana
Microsoft.
From
Microsoft. Those are less so because they have somewhat smaller ecosystems. But right now you're kind of locked into a particular ecosystem, or you have to use multiple assistants for your multiple kind of digital spaces. And part of that is tied to the marketplaces. Like if you want to shop on Amazon, you use Alexa. And if you want to, search for YouTube videos, you're probably going to be best using the Google Assistant and anything, Apple TV, that's going to be Siri. But I think the future of this is going to divorce the assistant from the hardware in the case of the Alexa devices and to some extent even the ecosystem. So you will have a third party assistant that you can easily swap in and out if you decide that today Alexa is not meeting my needs and the Google Assistant better understands me and better uses my data to assess what I really want, you should be able to flip switch and transfer that responsibility over, but still have access to all of the same, it's your data that's using. And so you would, in an ideal world, own that, which loops back to the Fred Ersham article, because a big piece of that was enabling people to own their own data, but still, kind of lease it out, stake that for use in these algorithms. But so all that data about you that the assistant is using, you own that. But you can swap out the AI, the algorithm, the machine learning that's operating on that to get a better result if you're satisfied with the particular one that you're using. So that's the future I want. I don't know how we get from here to there, but that's the future I want.
No, that's a very good point. That's a very good way to end on, and that almost loops it back around to the way something like Google started, where we're not going to build the websites. We're just going to index them and search them for you with an intelligent algorithm. And so, you want your agents to do the same thing, but it's a way different problem. It's the equivalent problem 30 years later or 20 years later or however long it's been.
No one ever said technology wasn't cyclical. So,
yeah, yeah. All right. So next week I am going on vacation. I'm going down to Georgia and South Carolina. Going to have a good time with family on the beach, but that is not going to stop me from putting out an episode. Next week, I have a solo episode, and I'm going to wax philosophical, which is something that I'm a little nervous about because I'm not a philosopher, but I'm going to talk about the nature of facts, beliefs, and probability, and how to sort of juggle all of that when you're solving real world problems, when I'm solving real world problems. So this is how I think about this stuff in terms of, you know, hey, I have, you know, thought about this stuff because I have to solve technical problems in the real world because I am a machine learning engineer. And then I started, you know, going down the rabbit hole a little bit more into Bayesian statistics. Okay, what is a belief and what is a fact versus a belief? So I am going to lay out my current thinking on all of these questions. I think it's a fascinating topic. I hope there are people out there who find it as fascinating as me and can give me feedback, and then we can start a little discussion there. So look forward to that for next week. See you later, everyone. See you later, Aaron.
Thanks for having me again.
Yep, and have a good week, everyone. That's the show. If you want to contact me, the host, or ask a question that I can answer on the show, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. This show is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you want to keep up, remember to follow The Local Maximum on one of these platforms and to follow my Twitter account, @MaxClark. Have a great week.
Feel the power.
Don't care what you say, you're gonna say-